Welcome back, WNST and Baltimore Positive. We are Baltimore Positive today. We're Roost Chris, Pier 5. And we got Don Moeller here who has copious notes. I mean, you have... Dick Cass is here.
A little different styles here.
Yeah, Dick Cass is here today. Well, you know, that's okay.
It's because I'm a lawyer. He figures you have to prepare.
Right. No.
You're out of order.
I'm fundamentally prepared for all of this.
Right.
I would just say this. You've gone through notes. How many, like, Rhodes Scholars and Princetons and...
I'm not a Rhodes
three
Scholar.
You're another five. I kidded Nestor when I walked in tonight. I said, so let me see. Dick Cass is coming down this storied career, both in law and in the sports business and the Ravens. I said, oh, and by the way, he's another Phi Beta Kappa from an Ivy League school.
How's it done, dog? Guy, like, keep getting this
one week
on
after
the program.
Week. I think we were in the other room, you know, when they gave out those brains or something. We keep talking to a lot of really smart people.
Well, it's football season, and you know that's kind of why you're here. And we kind of like when we put this together. We're trying to, you know, have Santa Claus during football during Christmas season. But for you, in seeing the city and where we are, this is Baltimore Positive. Yeah. I think the most Baltimore Positive thing I've seen your organization do, and I'm about to suck up to you to start the programming, but I've done this privately.
There's another president who likes that, you know.
But you're not that guy.
Dick, we have a cardinal rule. Don't get him started on the president. We'll get nothing done.
We'll get nothing done. Okay. We'll get nothing done. So I won the PSL lottery this year after 23 years of being a PSL holder, and I gave my two seats to Jennifer Amerine, who's a leukemia survivor. She came out. This was during mini camp. So this is in June. First thing I've ever won, and I gave it away, and I'm a media member, so I'm out there. So I went out and spent, and afterward, there was a picnic that you, literally the president of the team comes out for the picnic, not because I'm there. You did that every day, right?
During the mini camps, yes. We did it every day during mini camps.
And you did an hour long what you're about to do here, which was sort of the state of where we are, right? Like literally.
Talked about the Ravens and sort of where we are and...
I don't know why I'm so impressed by that or shocked by that. Maybe it's because I don't have a press pass from the Orioles and they don't do these kind of things. But I don't know that the president of the New York Jets is doing that or anyone else. For you, and taking an hour or two out of your day and coming down and talking to fans, I mean, I think that that's sort of your gift. Is that you really are interested.
These are PSL holders, and they're the lifeblood of our organization, really. It's so hard. People don't appreciate... in a market that's a smaller market such as Baltimore, how difficult it is to have PSL holders. And so we cherish them, and we don't take them for granted. And so whenever we can, we try to get them out to the facility or give them an extra gift or something that's special. But there's 24,000 or 23,000 PSL holders throughout the stadium that occupy the vast majority of the stadium. So we can't do it for everybody because it doesn't work. So we have these small groups, and we try to reward as many as we can.
Well, in answering questions about the organization, I mean, the football team, let's start with Lamar and just do 5 minutes on the team.
Sure.
Don, you've spoken about this. You've been out there, and you know a lot of people in the facility. There is really a bouncing step, I think,
there
for everybody
is.
In the organization.
I told Nestor, and I do want to hear and talk a little bit about football, but we also want to talk a lot about the business side. But I told Nestor a couple of minutes, Dick, before you walked in, I said, Nestor, you've known all these folks a long time. I've known them a long time. They've got a little giddy up. they think that we may be about to see something special. Are we reading that correctly?
You are. I mean, I think the whole organization is very excited about Lamar and about our offense. I mean, we have had one quarterback for the last 11 years, and he did a great job for us. We won the Super Bowl. He took us to a Super Bowl. Super Bowl MVP. He'll never be forgotten in the city if he drank, and he doesn't drink. But if he did drink, he'd never have to buy a drink in Baltimore.
Nestor's favorite Raven ever, I think you've said.
I'm my favorite Baltimore sports athlete ever.
Joe Flacco. Yeah, great guy, wonderful man, great family. You know, but I think he was ready for a change, and we were ready for a change. And so now we have Lamar. And as an organization, from a football standpoint, we are all in on Lamar. We're building an offense that will really emphasize his strengths, which are very different than Joe's strengths. So we're excited about it. Everyone around the organization is excited. It's going to be a new offense, a different offense. There are elements of it that other teams have done, but in an era when it's so pass heavy, we're not going to be as pass heavy as other teams. We've got some different looks that people are going to have to get used to, and we're very pleased about the way it's going. Lamar, as a quarterback, I mean, he's got this tremendous athletic ability that is quite remarkable and is really unique in the NFL. And last year he was criticized for his passing and the lack of accuracy, and he wasn't an effective passer. But when you go back and look at the stats, the irony of that is that his percentage completion of 58% was about what Joe was as a rookie and was better than any other rookie in the league last year, except for Baker Mayfield. His touchdown to interception ratio was the same as Joe's rookie year. His passer rating was basically the same as Joe. As a rookie, his performance, when you look at those types of stats, really matched those of some other rookies in the league who've grown on to be great, great quarterbacks. But the encouraging thing for us is that in the offseason, Lamar has shown great improvement as a passer. He's worked really hard at it, both in our mini camps and the time in between when he was on his own, worked on his own. He's really improved. He's improved in training camp, we think. So we're excited. You never in the NFL, you never know what is going to happen. But we're very excited. We've got him under contract for 4 more years. It's the whole thing about having a rookie quarterback under his rookie contract. So he's going to be good this year, we think. I think he'll be better in year 3 and even better in year 4. And next year, we will have a lot more cap room than we had this year. So we're sort of situated well, not only this year, I hope, and I think, but also I think we'll be in a better, stronger position next year.
Well, one of the things I say to people, Dick, in terms of the team and the outlook of the team is my gut tells me Ravens are going to be better. They're going to be exciting. They're going to put people in the stands. And again, we'll talk at length about that, something I'm sure you think about each and every day. But we could be better and still have some challenges. When I look at our schedule and the quarterbacks we play, but we play some of the premier quarterbacks in the NFL. I mean, it's a schedule.
We have a very rough schedule, particularly our road schedule. And we played very well on the road last year with Lamar as our quarterback, but we have a very challenging road schedule this year. And we have to go to Kansas City, we have to go to Pittsburgh, we have to go to the LA Rams, we have to go to Seattle, and then we go to Cleveland. So it's a very difficult road schedule. There's no real gimme games on that schedule when we're on the road. So it's going to be a tough road. But I think we have the type of offense that travels well. When you last year, when you look at the last 7 games where Lamar started for us, we led the league in first downs during that 7-game stretch. We led the league in rushing during that 7-game stretch. We possessed the ball an incredible amount of the time, so our defense wasn't on the field as frequently as it had been in prior games. So those are things and characteristics of our offense that make it a good traveling team. And it showed last year when we traveled at the end of the year. We beat the Chargers on the road. We beat the Atlanta Falcons on the road. And we took the Kansas City Chiefs to overtime and lost that in a heartbreaking fashion. But we went against 3 great quarterbacks on the road last year and did very well, in part because our defense played extremely well, but in part because our offense was different and we possessed the ball a long time. And that really keeps their offense off the field.
How worried are you? How worried is the organization? Every day somebody writes about the offensive line. Left guard is still not settled. We're going into the final preseason game. One of Nestor's favorite topics because he loves preseason games. as you know.
I'm going to get to all of this.
I know.
But how worried are you about left? Because when you do want to run and you got to – you've got a quarterback back there who you hope is going to be your franchise guy. How worried are you?
Well, remember, we were a very effective running team the last 7 games of the year. And the offensive line we started during those 7 games is essentially the same line we've got this year. Our tackles are both back, Ronnie Stanley and Orlando Brown. They're both young. They both will be better, I think, this year than they were last year. Marshall Yund is back and healthy. He hasn't played I don't think he's played a single down in the preseason. Maybe he got in one play or one series. I can't remember. But he's essentially been – we've been resting him. He's ready to go. Matt Skurr at center – you know, he started every game for us for 2 years. In the 17 season, he started at guard.
He's a solid guy.
Last year, he started center. He's smart. He's solid. So then you got, you know, left guard. And, right. you know, last year, we during that stretch, for the most part, we had James Hurst at left guard. So, you know, I hear the concern, and when we went into the offseason, we had hoped to add some more people to the offensive line and get even stronger, but we're not chopped liver on the offensive line at all.
And there's still a little time left.
There's a little time left.
Season,
yeah.
Before the season takes place. Dick, back up before we do too much more football, because Nestor knows your background. I know a little bit about your background, but for those folks who might be listening, who football isn't the thing they live and breathe every day, tell them a little bit about your background, both in the law and the sports, and how you ended up in Baltimore.
Well, I ended up in – it's really how I ended up in the NFL, because I ended up in Baltimore because of the NFL. But when I was a corporate lawyer in Washington, D.C. for a large firm, now called Wilmer Hale, used to be Wilmer Cutler in Pickering. And in the late 1980s, I represented Jerry Jones when he bought the Cowboys. And then,
did you think that was neat?
I thought it was absolutely cool.
You were an athlete, right?
I mean, yeah, in high school,
did you think that was the height of what you were?
Listen, when I'm in our building out of Owings Mills, I don't call myself an athlete. I'm surrounded by world class.
But for those people who are listening, Dick was the president of the student government and captain of the baseball, football, and basketball team. So. He did something in high school.
I did something in high school, yeah.
You understand how the games are played.
Back
to Jerry Jones.
And I love sports. And so I met Jerry Jones, and we met in the late 1980s, and there was a long holiday weekend coming up, and he called me.
And he said, wasn't Jerry Jones then. He was just sort of the crazy guy that just buying the team, right?
He was an oil and gas guy from Arkansas. And I didn't even know they had oil and gas in Arkansas.
But when Jerry Jones in line, it's just Jerry Jones. It's just a guy, right?
We had done work for his business, his oil and gas business. So I met him through that. And he said he wanted to buy a team. And so I said, great, let's get together and we'll talk about it. So he calls me up and says, listen, I'm down in Dallas and I'm getting close to, I think, to getting a term sheet on a team on buying the Dallas Cowboys. Would you come down and represent me? And it was like Friday afternoon. So I go down, and Friday afternoon, I'm there all weekend. We negotiated a deal. I go back to Washington to put a team together, come back and do the due diligence and get all the papers ready and get the financing done and all of that. And later that week, I'm lying in bed with my wife. We're getting ready to go to sleep. We're watching the 11 o'clock news, and the flash comes on the TV. Dallas Cowboys have been sold. I said, what the hell?
Did my guy not get in?
And Jerry Jones had given a press conference and fired Tom Landry and done all of that, and we didn't have a single thing in writing. We had nothing. We had a handshake.
It's kind of like our government's running right now.
A little bit.
Oh, man.
So I get a call. You know, this was...
Nothing drives a lawyer nuts.
No.
More nuts than when a deal is announced but not signed, right?
Yeah, and so I go back down to Dallas on Sunday night, the next weekend, and I meet with Jerry, and the deal still go, but we haven't done anything. I've got a draft agreement and everything to start negotiating. And I get a call from the NFL, and the NFL says to me, "Who's Jerry Jones?" And how could he fire Tom Landry when you don't have a contract? You haven't been approved by the league. So the league adopted what they now call the Jerry Jones rule, which says you cannot fire anybody on a team until you actually own the team.
Well, that sounds like a good rule.
It's a good rule. It's a reasonable rule.
It's reasonable. Yeah.
So that's how I got into the NFL. It's really through Jerry.
So you knew it was a circus from day one.
Yeah.
Stick with Jerry.
The NFL was a very different business then. Pete Rozelle was still the commissioner, and we went to the league meeting in March to get league approval. And it was at that meeting that Pete Rozelle announced he was retiring as commissioner. So we then dealt with Paul. Jerry then became the owner before Paul Tagliabue had been appointed as a commissioner. And as a first-year owner, he led a group of owners to block the person that the league insiders wanted to make the commissioner
Jim
of the
Finks.
League. Jim Finks.
Yes.
So he and a group of other owners got enough votes to veto it. And so then it had to continue, and that was all in year one.
Well, let's talk about that. That's because we talk so much, Dick, about leadership as part of Baltimore Positive. I want to stick with Jerry for a minute.
Because he's a maverick, right?
You're talking about this guy fires a coach before he owns the team, goes to the first owner's meeting, they don't even know who he is, and somehow puts together a coalition that's able to get enough votes to at least in a short term.
He was a disruptor before we knew what a disruptor
and
was.
He went to owners who saw the possibility of growing the NFL into a bigger business, a more successful business than it currently was. And so he said, we really ought to get – Jim Finks is not the right person for the job, essentially. It's not – he liked Jim Finks. Everyone liked him. But he basically convinced some other people. And there were others who were like-minded. It wasn't as though he was the only guy. But they got a group together to do it. And Jerry, you know, I think – Jerry, I've always thought of Jerry as a bit of a visionary in the sense of what he had this vision about the NFL. He was the first person to understand that you can take an NFL stadium and make a lot of money out of it. In the past, NFL stadiums had really been controlled by cities or states.
Well, that's why you're here. That's why we're here. We're here because Cleveland Stadium was mismanaged, literally, right?
I don't know exactly.
Well, that's how it happened, though,
yeah.
Right?
I mean, it happened. There are a lot of reasons. It's the reason why Ursay left Baltimore in part.
Was the stadium?
Was the stadium, and
sure.
He couldn't figure out how to make the stadium work.
Go back to Jerry's vision, though, because you were touching on it. I don't want to lose that he was the first one
to realize
in stadiums. Talk about that.
He began to realize that what fans really want. They want to get close to the team. And there are a lot of sponsors out there, companies out there, who want to tap into the fan base. So Jerry figured, if I can get together with sponsors and get them together with the fans, I can make the sponsors spend a lot of money with me because I'm giving them our fans. And that's sort of that was his vision. And he said one way to execute the vision is to put signs up in the stadium and sell them for a lot of money. I mean, it sounds revolutionary. I mean, at the time, people really weren't doing much of that. The cities controlled the stadium, but they didn't control the fans, so they could put up a sign. But why would a sponsor pay any money? Because the city wasn't delivering the players to them or delivering the sizzle of the football team to their customers. So he basically quickly saw that there was money to be made. And Texas Stadium was one of the few stadiums that was owned. When Jerry bought the Dallas Cowboys, he did a separate deal to buy Texas Stadium. So it was two separate deals. There was common ownership, but not totally complete common ownership.
So the relationship that Baltimoreans are used to, and tell me if this is not what you're alluding to, but what I think about Helote with Royal Farms, and then obviously Justin Tucker now singing opera in the middle of every, that kind of sponsorship for the team, connecting them to a player.
A lot of those we don't share in. Those are done, that's how it was done before. So a player would go do his own deal. And he couldn't use the logos of the team, but he could do his own deal. What Jerry began to do is to really say to companies that, listen, we've got a large fan base who follow us, everything we do. They really care what we do. If they see our coach on the sideline with a particular kind of jacket, they're going to want to buy that jacket. So when Jerry came into the league used to assign apparel companies to a team. And that company would then have the rights to put jackets on your sideline and to put a logo on the team uniform. But the team would, the apparel company would then do a deal with the head coach, and the head coach would get paid $10,000 for wearing their jacket on the sideline. The team would get nothing. So when we did a head coaching contract the first time, we acquired Jimmy Johnson. All of Jimmy Johnson's media rights belonged to the Cowboys. He could not do any media deal without going through the Cowboys.
Now, was that unusual at the time in terms of contract?
Yes, that was unusual at the times. Yes, it was. And so Jerry quickly realized that sideline, because there's millions of people watching the sideline, and they're seeing what the coach is wearing and what logo he's got on his jacket, and there was real value there. So that led to one of the fights with the NFL. Did a team control its sideline, or did the league control the sideline? That was one of the early battles we had with the NFL. Then we started putting signs up in the stadium that would get seen by the TV cameras. And then the question was, well, the networks complained about it. And then, well, did the teams have the right to put signs up in the stadium that could be seen on cameras? That was another battle. And then the NFL used to say, we control, and they did contractually, own all the marks and logos of all the teams for all commercial reasons. And the teams didn't have, so every team in the league, when Jerry came in the league, poured Coca-Cola, because Coca-Cola had the rights for the NFL for all of the teams. So Jerry said, well, I mean, we can make a lot more money as a league if every team can do its own deal and the league has a league deal. And he said the same on beer. Every stadium poured Budweiser and had Budweiser signs. And Jerry said, look, if we went, gave each team their own, the right to do their own deal, collectively we're going to make a lot more money. And that's, we had litigation over that in 1995, and it got settled. And the business model we follow now is the business model that Jerry really pushed on the league back beginning, really, 93, 94.
Is that the argument to put him in the Hall of Fame? You know, part of that is what his contribution to the game would be.
People
would say he hadn't won a Super Bowl since you were around, like literally,
but I think
years.
Yeah, it's been a long time. But I think that's part of it. I think it's also he's played important roles on the broadcast committee. He led back in we had a recession. I forget exactly when it was. It was probably 1996. I mean, there was a dip in television revenues, and the networks came to the league and basically said, listen, we're struggling a little bit to pay you the rights fee at this current rights fee. What we'd like to do is we'd like to extend the current agreement with a flat rights fee. We'll pay what we owe you this year, but we want you to keep it flat for the next two or three years. So, and Jerry, again, got a group together and said, no, we're not going to do that because I think maybe Fox will come in and we'll have another bidder for the rights. And I don't remember what year.
Well, that created the explosion.
And, and then that's when Fox did come in and bid. And so Jerry blocked the deal. They couldn't do that deal. So the networks were unhappy that that had the deals at that moment. But so the deal terminated, and then Fox came in and bid the rights fees up, and they got a tremendous increase.
Well, and it's interesting, Dick, when you talk about rights fees and Jerry and the whole media approach. One of the things I read the other day, and I had to read it twice because I thought that's pretty amazing. They were talking about, you know, people like to say things, and it sort of becomes legend. Like nobody's watching the NFL anymore. Nobody's watching. Interest is down, and the article, I said, wait a minute. You understand that every year to this day, at the end of the year, 70 to 75 of the top-rated telecast out of the top 100 in all television are NFL games.
I think what happened in
three quarters. That's remarkable.
It's a lot. I'll give you those numbers in a second. But I think get me wrong. I mean, our rights fees went up not because of Jerry. They went up, but he blocked that one deal. The rights fees have gone up over time because American people love football. So they watch the NFL in incredible numbers. 2017, people were freaking out because our ratings went down compared to 2016. 2018, the ratings were up 5%. The amazing thing about being up in terms of viewership, the amazing thing about that 5% increase, every other programming category was down except cable news. Cable news was up 3%. NFL
election
was up,
year, maybe. Yeah.
No, it wasn't. It was election year, but it was more the Trump effect.
Sure. I was going to say, back to your person not talking about.
The man whose name cannot be mentioned.
The man whose name we won't mention.
It's his effect
we
on.
We keep Nestor focused.
That second segment, we're going to get into that.
So that's cable news.
So, I was in London that day. I saw you that day.
But that cable, so the cable news was up 3%. We were up 5%. Broadcast primetime television was down 7%. College football was down. NBA, the numbers I saw said they were down 11%. We were up 5%. So, you know, that it's still this past year, 19 of the top 20 most watched shows in the United States were NFL broadcast. 19 of 20.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And it's 37 out of the top 50.
Imagine how it would be if it wasn't doing so poorly.
Yeah,
37 out of 50. It's amazing.
It's
still Super Bowl, the most watched event ever, other than MASH, right? Isn't that the thing?
It's still, it always varies. I'm not sure of those numbers. It may be the final episode of MASH.
I can't remember.
Yeah.
So just amazing. So much to talk
about.
Let's
take a break.
Well, let's thank our sponsors first
of
all. We're down here at Ruth's Chris. Come on down to Baltimore City. Wonderful place to eat. Come on down to Pier 5. Love Baltimore City. Do that. Also, we love our suburban sponsors in Jennings and State Fair. We're up the street tomorrow, actually, again, with Ron Shapiro at Fadley's downtown. And then, Nestor, you're actually going to host, really exciting, I don't think Dick even knows this, you're going to be part of an equity housing conference, a major
Damon
O'Doherty issue.
Came on last week. Yeah, we're talking about ways to fix a city. Yeah. That's where we're going to get into this.
Housing's a real issue. So it's great. Dick Cass, Baltimore Ravens, Baltimore Positive.
I see you guys doing stuff all over the city, so I know you know a lot about this as well. President of the Ravens here, Dick Cass. We're back for more WNST and Baltimore Positive. Towson, Baltimore, from Bruce Chris downtown.